I know there's rules, but there's a smell of the game. There is no football person would disallow that goal.
The final decision is a direct free kick to Manchester City and a red card.
I actually have been a fan of VAR, and I'm a fan of VAR. I think it gets some things right. That one has just killed the joy. The reason that fans watch football matches is for entertainment.
Hello and welcome to The Sound of Football. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Actually, lads, can I try something new this week?
Ooh.
Mm. Okay. Hello and welcome to The Smell of Football. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Deep heat.
That's some good football I'm smelling there.
How do you feel, guys? How do you think that sits? Maybe it is time to branch off into a different sense. I mean, we've been the sound of football for 16 and a half seasons. Maybe it's time to branch out. You know, explore some of the other sensory organs that we have. What do you think, Jan?
Yeah, before somebody else starts up the smell of football. We need to get that domain sorted.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting smells, actually, about football. Deep heat, as I mentioned. Vicks Vapor Rub.
Yes.
Body odour. All very, very interesting.
Yes.
All very interesting.
Terry, where does your mind go? What does the smell of football evoke with you?
Oh, very much in the bad takeaway food variety. Hot dogs, pies back in the day, of course. Stale football on the breath of my brethren, you know, that sort of stuff. Very much my idea of the smell of football. I did check the domain, guys. It seems to be registered under a company called The Overlap.
Oh, damn.
I don't know, I'm entirely certain.
God damn those guys.
What's happened there? Owner, one G. Neville, address, the British Virgin Islands. What the hell's going on there?
Only kidding, Gary. You're great.
Yes. Well, of course, we're referring to an off-the-cuff remark that Gary Neville made last night. We're recording this on Monday. And the big game on Sunday was Man City at Anfield. Liverpool versus Man City. Great match, wasn't it? Well, was it a great match? Liverpool were taking the lead with about a quarter of an hour ago. Another free kick from outside the area by Szoboszlai. For an Arsenal fan, it all looked very, very familiar back to when we got beat 1-0 by Liverpool at Anfield earlier on in the season. But then, unlike Arsenal, who didn't get anything out of that game, City did. City managed to get an equaliser and then what looked like a winner, a winning penalty. In injury time. So it looked like it was all done and dusted. There was quite a lot of injury time to play. And Alisson went up for a corner. I think, he went up for a set piece, didn't he? And, Jan, why don't you remind the listeners, if they don't know what happened next, what unfolded from that moment on?
It was craziness, Graham. It was nothing short of craziness. So as you mentioned, Alisson went up for a set piece or an attack. The ball was launched forward towards the giant Brazilian, but it didn't make it that far. And the ball came away from the Liverpool players and fell to Shirky's feet. And he played it forward from just inside of his own area, which should have been a short, kind of ended up being a short. But he played it forward, and racing towards the ball to make sure it went in was Haaland and Szoboszlai. And just outside of the box, Szoboszlai grabbed hold of Haaland and pulled him back, which is a lot of work because he's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he was running incredibly quickly. Those players then changed places. Then Haaland then pulled Szoboszlai back, Meanwhile, the ball is just minding its own business, trundling away to goal. And then as those players collided with each other on Haaland's foul, the ball just trundled on in. And that was it. It was a perfectly good goal.
Or so we thought. This is last knockings. This is City turning a 2-1 win into a 3-1 win. Everything looked fine and dandy, didn't it? Blow up, ref. This game's cooked, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, that's right. It was a beautiful moment. Relatively speaking, low stakes because, yeah, the game was won. But, you know, I suppose in the battle of the goal difference, I don't know, which is not out of the question, it could come down to, it could have been a crucial goal.
Yeah.
Or a broader context for Liverpool, of course, because losing 2-1 is bad, losing 3-1 is worse with all of the stuff that's going on there. But more than that, it was a moment of beautiful chaos. There are a few finer things in football than just pure chaos goals and chaos moments. No, and especially now in the modern professionalised game, where everything is so process-driven, that it is always nice to know that you will have moments in the game where everything just goes completely to pot. Things fall apart, guys. Get the keeper up there. It's terrible tactics. We really shouldn't be doing it, but get him up there anyway because we're just so desperate to get back in the game. And then there's always the danger or the anticipation and the hope, depending on your point of view, that backfires. And the opposition score on the break. And that's exactly what happened here in hilarious fashion. You don't often get to see it, but a ball essentially scoring itself. You know, I mean, like if that nothing had happened, well, obviously nothing kind of did happen. If that goal had stood, then that would have been an assist, wouldn't it, for Cherki? It would not have been his goal because it would have been the ball's goal. It would have been credited to the ball. It was magnificent. And you just love to see stuff like that. But sadly, we don't live in that kind of world anymore.
No.
And the goal was rightly disallowed,
yes,
according to the laws of the game.
Yes.
The goal, it was rightly disallowed. And I think this needs to be said very clearly, that it was not a goal that should have stood. And it didn't.
No, it didn't. It didn't stand. There was an immediate VAR check after it. And after looking at it, the referee decided that it should not be a goal. It should be a free kick to Man City from outside the box where the original offence took place. Dominic Szoboszlai was sent off for denying a goal-scoring opportunity, even though it ended up being a goal. Don't overthink it, listeners. Don't overthink it, okay? And there was also the foul afterwards by Haaland inside the penalty area that was basically pulling Szoboszlai away from clearing the ball, which was the best part of the thing. This whole dance that they had was beautiful. Someone needs to put a tango underneath that. That was wonderful. But yeah, this whole thing then just exploded. This is where we go back to what I was talking about at the top of the show, the smell of football. Because Gary Neville sees that there's a VAR check and just goes into a different place. I'm going to quote him here. "I just don't get this. He's fouled him. I know there's rules, but there is the smell of the game. No referee should disallow that goal, but it is going to be disallowed." Terry, do you get what's Gary's saying there?
Oh, massively. Yeah, I don't know. I probably wouldn't have put it like that, but then... He's the broadcaster, and I'm just the dude who just records a weekly podcast after he's got home from work on a Monday evening. So who am I to tell how Gary Neville should express and articulate, you know, his feelings for the games in moments like this? It was a beautiful moment. I must confess that I missed that remark in amongst all. I must have heard it because I was watching the game and I was listening to what Gary Neville was saying. But much like the referee who initially missed Haaland's foul, it just passed me by completely. I just didn't hear that. And it is a shame because I think that would have amused me hugely. Again, it's all part of just the theatre of that moment.
Yes.
Was that coverage. And it's why, you know, it's so much fun watching the Premier League because of the chaos that Sky will often bring to itself. That if what's happening on the pitch isn't enough, then you can rely on Sky to bring some additional narrative and chaos in moments like that. And it was a beautiful moment in broadcasting history. And what it was actually a beautiful moment in football history as well. It was great. I'm sorry that it wasn't a goal. It should have been a goal. I really am. But there is an element of theatre and something to enjoy about the fact that it wasn't. And it was against two teams that most people are going to have a good laugh at. Most neutrals are going to have a good laugh at both of these teams and the silliness that ensues between them.
Yeah, and do you see Gary's point, though, that this is completely against the smell of the game?
I think fundamentally it is against the smell of the game. However, I think he was reaching for the word spirit rather than smell.
Spirit smell?
Yeah, I mean, I mix them up all the time. I'm going to go with spirit here.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
I think it was against the spirit and also the smell of the game. I actually was on my feet when I realised they were going to rule this out, because as Terry said, it was proper theatre. It was chaos. It was like watching a ballet. It was wonderful. It was everything that is great about watching football. Because as you pointed out, Graham, prior to that, okay, there'd been a couple of goals, but there hadn't really been much incident.
No.
It was an okay game. It was certainly better than the M23 derby earlier, which wasn't great, unfortunately, although a great result. But there wasn't much happening on Sunday. And then for that mad 1 minute, suddenly I'd forgotten all about the rest of the day and how football can be dull to watch, and it had been that day. And that just brought this sparkle of life into it. It was wonderful. And I thought, don't take that away from us. Do not take that away from us, because this is what people want to see all of the time. But the fact that it's so rare makes it so beautiful, and we should harness and hold it and put a little jar around it and look at it and admire it. But it was snatched away from us, and that is a travesty. We're sanitizing the game to the extent that we're just rubbing away the rough edges, and it's just this smooth, perfect product, which can be uninteresting at times. And I think that that was just this lovely rough edge that just created some, it was glorious. It was glorious. And it's a shame it wasn't allowed to stand. Although I understand from the rules of the game, play became dead the second that Haaland was pulled back. So that was the end of that, really. But it was just too exciting to even comprehend as that is. And I think that the most comical thing was just the ball. Just
doing
its thing.
No one
was anywhere near the ball. Yeah. It was all off the ball play. Yeah. Everyone was performing well off the ball as the ball just trundled along. Terry, was it a Crystal Palace goal a few years ago where the ball just found its way across the line?
It was about 20 or 30 years ago, now. Yeah, it was a League Cup game. It was Chris Coleman who scored, and it was absolutely sheeting down with rain. And it was a defensive mix-up. It was against Chelsea, and the goalkeeper came out, and Chris Coleman poked the ball just past underneath the goalkeeper, Kevin Hitchcock, I think, and it just crawled over the line. And like, I was standing behind the goal and watching it, and we're all going, "Wah!" and then building to this crescendo where finally it went over the line. It was glorious. It did. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was thinking about that moment when I saw that, and I thought, this reminds me of that, even though in a very meaningful way, that's not what it was. But it is about the ball. You know, these days, guys, it's all about good strikers. They let the ball do all the work, don't they? But this was taken to the absolute maximum degree. This was like perfect football. This is what Pep Guardiola probably dreams of, moments like this, where actually all his players just like dance around the ball and the ball just finds its own way without ever being touched by a player. It's just like magnificent. If they ever do make a ballet of the Premier League, then I just hope that that moment is just like captured, because I think it would be amazing. It would be absolutely amazing. But it wasn't a goal, though.
I think it was the speed the ball was travelling which was the most beautiful part of this. You're right, there's chaos and speed and calamity hanging around, and the ball's just slowly creeping in, completely in opposition to what's happening around it. It was great. A moment of the season. without a doubt.
Well, yeah, and you say it was taken away, but it wasn't taken away really, because we always have it and we're talking about it right now, aren't we?
You're absolutely right, and this is true. This does occur to me. I just think that it would have been good because, you know, like, you would have wanted to have been given the opportunity of voting for it in a popular Goal of the Season competition, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because, well, we can't now. I mean, like, we also would have liked the opportunity for the ball to have had its own sticker in a next season sticker album, but that's now been denied to us because it's, you know, it's been denied its rightful place in history. But you are quite right. It brought enough theatre to be, and it will be talked about for years, this moment. It may even prove to be a pivotal moment in the whole VAR thing, because although it was in the rules, that rule, that aspect of Law 12 I was reading before I go in here, was specifically changed for VAR. The denial of the goal scoring opportunity was specifically changed for VAR. I would suggest that pre-VAR, that goal would have stood.
Mm, yeah, well, this is what you get with VAR, isn't it? And we always come back to it, that VAR, to implement it successfully, you need to have consistent rules. And once you put in consistent rules, there is no room for common sense anymore. So if you see Alan Shearer, because it's usually him, saying the referee's got to use common sense there, and then in the next breath say, oh, what I want to see is consistency in decision making, then you know that the guy's talking out of his ass, because you cannot have both. They cannot coexist. You either have consistency or you have common sense. Or what you have is what we had for years. You had a balance between the two. And now we can't have that. Now we can't have that. So we have to mess about with rules like offside, like handball. Handball has been messed about pretty much every season that VAR has been in operation, just to make it work with VAR. Offside is now ridiculous. It's now utterly ridiculous. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. These two things are not in isolation. It's every rule. And as Terry says, they have changed rules just for VAR. Before VAR, that would have stood. Of course it would have stood. He could have let it go. But he can't now, because he's got to be seen to send off Dominic Szoboszlai. And if you leave the goal to stand, he can't send him off. I don't know why he can't send him off, because players are sent off for yellow cards even when the player that they fouled goes on and scores. So why you can't just give him a red card for trying to deny the goal? Yeah, okay, you can argue things to you blue in the face about how things should have gone in that situation, but as the law stands, yeah, the referee made the right decision. But it's only like that because VAR is there. And to say that VAR shouldn't have got involved, it already had. It already got involved when the laws were changed. So it goes back a lot further than when someone in Stockley Park says, I think you should have a look at that one.
Yeah, I think that it is important, particularly to any proponents of VAR, that this is not about, oh, you're blaming VAR, this is the laws of the game. No, the denial of the goal scoring opportunity law was specifically altered by IFAB in order to accommodate VAR. And that is a fact. Take that fact to the fact bank, cash it in, you'll get a good return. I promise you. Look it up. Prior to this, it could have been disallowed. The referee might have disallowed it, because then the referee would have made a judgment call and say, well, look, what's the more serious thing here? What do I do? How do I do this? And conceivably could have disallowed it on the basis of Haaland's foul afterwards. I would suggest it's extremely unlikely that they would have done.
Yeah.
They would have gone, no, well, I played the advantage, and so that's fine, and it's done. And I've assessed the whole situation in this moment. But of course, because you have to have consistency with VAR, you're just not allowed to make that kind of call anymore. And so we've been denied this glorious moment. Referees have been denied, you know, a degree of agency. It's just another way of taking more art out of the situation. And it is entirely 100% VAR's fault that we are in this position. And that's why people are right to be angry with the principle of VAR in moments like this, and why it adds more fuel to that particular argument, that it should be just done away with completely, because it's rubbish. In this instance, it was absolutely rubbish and it was terrible. If the score had been 1-1, I mean, now there really would have been genuine chaos. But as it happens, in this instance, it was not that big a deal. But there are circumstances in the future where that might change. And in not just in the denial of a goal score opportunity, but also in moments like handballs and stuff like that. You know, laws that are changed because only... And I don't think it's an exaggeration. It's probably 99.99% of the population of who play football don't play with VAR.
Yeah.
I think that this needs to always be remembered, that the game is universal, or these laws apply to everyone who plays organised football. But only a teeny tiny number of them are actually playing with VAR. And yet we're changing the rules. I mean, that's just... I mean, whenever I think of it like that, it just blows my mind as just to how unutterably daft that is. I get it's the professional game. I get it's a game that is where billions of pounds is ploughed into it and millions of people are watching it at any one time. But still and all, surely this is a game that is to be played primarily more than it is to be watched. I guess that's the thing about VAR, is that it exists to serve the audience rather than to serve the players. And this feels philosophically like a wrong move for the game.
That's entirely correct. We're laughing at Gary's choice of words here. Now, he actually admitted in that middle of that rant that he loves VAR as a concept. But I think he's firmly in the camp it's just not being used correctly. That's stage one of realising how crap VAR is. That's the first step. That's denial. He thinks that VAR should work. And yet it is the people around it, people who are meant to be implementing it. And worse still, it's the referees that aren't doing it properly. And this is what VAR is here to help them. Ostensibly, anyway. But of course, it's not here to help them. It's here to help the broadcasters. That's what it's there for. It's here to help the company that owns VAR, who sold it to football. So that's what VAR is really doing here. It's not anything anyone asked for. So... we've got the VAR that the game deserves, that is probably about as good as it's ever going to get. And until you've got the rules set up in such a way that you can just do away with referees and just completely automate it and just hook your cameras up to Copilot and let that choose whatever decision it's going to do. And then you'll really love football then, won't you, listeners?
That's the trajectory we're looking at, though. Isn't it? I mean, we joked about this years ago, just saying don't have referees.
Yeah.
Just if you can have cameras, just give it over to them. I didn't realize when I suggested that subject that it might actually end up being the dystopian future we all dreaded, but actually it's now the dystopian reality that we're edging towards. If the idea is just to have complete adherence to the laws of the game, no nuance whatsoever, then you're right, you might as well just hand it over to an AI with its eye in the sky, and it will make flawless decisions all of the time, and it will be as dull as shit.
But yeah, because for it to cope with the laws, you'll have to have laws that are so arcane, so intricate, that you would never be able to explain it. It would be like reams and reams and reams of machine code. You just won't know until it happens, and you see it and say, right, okay, that's how it works. You've got to see every single possible outcome on a pitch. Yeah, you've got to wait for everything to come up before you know whether or not something is allowable or not allowable.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was perfectly illustrated by that incident. Because, I mean, what's happened is Craig Pawson has probably seen Haaland's foul on Szoboszlai. But even if he did see it and thought about it, he probably thought, well, I'm going to wait till the ball's dead and this will go upstairs and then I don't have to think about this. But it's entirely likely that he may have seen it, but it might just simply have not registered that this is what's happened, because he could conceivably have just blown his whistle and said, sorry, guys, that is not a goal because of reasons. But because it's an additional layer that he has to think about amongst all the other things that he's got to think about the laws that he wouldn't have had to have done 5-10 years ago. And so we see this sort of like additional layers of things for referees to think about, new laws, new interpretations of the laws, new subsections and clauses within those laws. And at some point it will reach a critical mass where a human being just can't keep all that stuff in their heads. And not just the referees, but the players as well. There's a good chance if Haaland had just kept his hands away from Szoboszlai, then that ball may well have crept over and it would have been a glorious goal and it would have been a goal. It would have totally have stood. It's just that he instinctively reaches out for it. But players have to know the laws of the game as well. And I suspect players don't know the laws of the game as well as referees do, which is odd because they should do because it's the game they're playing. But I suspect they probably are not as well versed in the laws. But there's still more and more things for players to think about. And it makes the game more complicated and therefore makes it harder to play. and almost impossible to officiate. But yes, so we are looking at a dystopian future whereby it's like, well, you know, this is too hard for referees now. The best way to support them would be by sacking them and replacing them with AI. And then they can just go home and watch it and enjoy it on the television like the rest of us.
There was another incident this weekend, a much, much lower key incident that happened in the Newcastle game. Newcastle losing at home. But there was a penalty incident there. I don't know if you guys saw it, but there was a handball. Murphy has his arms down by his side. The ball is kicked at him and it hits his arm. There is some movement in the arm. So you can argue whether or not there was movement towards the ball. Depends which angle you look at. Some angles it looks dodgy. Other angles it looks like he's got his arm down by his side. But there is one clear angle where you can see that the ball, if his arm isn't in the way, it's going into the goal. And I think the official statement was that it was an unintentional handball, but it is still given as a penalty because it stops the ball going in. And I think this is more about how you think the game should be officiated and what the spirit or the smell of the game should be. Because there was a few years ago when they got rid of the thing where you could actually score by hitting your arm. If it was accidental and it bounced off your arm and went in, it would still be a goal. And they stopped that. I remember there was Alexis Sanchez when he was playing for Arsenal. I think it was against Hull. The ball bounced off him, off his knee, and I think hit his arm and went in, and the goal counted. And there was an outcry about it because you shouldn't be able to score with your arm. But if you're not allowed to score with your arm, then you shouldn't be able to stop a goal going in with your arm, no matter if it's accidental or not, no matter if you've got your arm right down by your side. If you want to stop that, put your arm behind your back. Lots of people do that. So for me, I think that was a perfectly legitimate penalty. And I don't think that really needs VAR to tell you that that was a penalty or any weird things about unnatural position or silhouettes or things like that.
It's interesting, actually, because I was I had to referee a football match a couple of weeks ago. And this is an under-18 side, so these are men charging around, men with opinions, and here's me, not a qualified referee at all. And there was a handball incident. It didn't involve a penalty. It wasn't a particularly challenging part of the pitch, but the ball did strike a player's arm that was down by his side. So as I understand the laws of the game now, that is not, I mean, it hit him on his like kind of forearm. And you know, there was never any chance of a goal or even a goal scoring opportunity coming from it. Not that that matters. It just struck his arm. In my world, that should be a handball. It hit him on the arm and it changed the course of the ball. And that's what 10 very large 18-year-olds were screaming at me at the time. But, you know, I was trying to go with kind of what I say on the telly, you know, which is his arm was down by his sides. And that's probably wrong as well. And they were probably wrong as well, arguing their points. I think just to go back to the point you made earlier about laws of the game have been changed for VAR, and as Terry quite rightly pointed out, there is only one competition where VAR is used all of the time in this country. But it's changed the laws for everyone. And now you've got to a point where you've literally got a game that is just one step up of jumpers for goalposts, the game I was asked to referee for. And you've got confusion, which where it should be simple. It really should be simple. It was once a simple game. And the complexity that there now is, I can see it driving people away. And a point, and you both are going to enjoy this next bit. If you're watching rugby union, sometimes they have to flash up and explain to viewers, and as the players are being explained by the referees, who are very well versed in what is a very, very complicated set of rules for that sport. And you have to explain it to people, and you shouldn't have to do that in football. You know, rugby does its thing, and that's fine. But this should be very, very straightforward. All of those rules, offside, handball, and so on, should be straightforward, and it isn't. And it's getting more complicated, and that can't be good for the game. It really can't.
Graham, may I go back to quickly just to the whole accidental handball thing for the Newcastle game? Because a couple of weeks earlier, JD Canvo gave away a penalty for much the same reason against Chelsea. His hands were by his side, and it was reviewed. He came off, the ball, there was a shot, ball came off his hand, it was reviewed, and it was given a penalty. But it was Because in that instance, it is a denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, which comes with a red card offence.
Mm.
And so the referee said, but because it's accidental, it's only a yellow card.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, look, my understanding of the card system was these were issued for serious breaches of the law.
Mm.
That's why you issued a card, because it was a foul plus. It was an infringement plus, a deliberate handball. It was a cynical breach of the law. And in the red card case, it's usually for when it becomes dangerous to others. For me, that's the smell of the disciplinary process. So why are we dishing out cards for things that happen by accident? I don't understand that. I mean, I do understand it because I'm not stupid and I understand the principle, but I don't think that that is fair. I think it's bad enough to accidentally give away a penalty.
Mm.
But if that is a thing now and you can accidentally give away penalties and accidentally deny goal scoring opportunities, then why would you then be issuing a yellow card to this 19-year-old kid who's come into the side? He's massively out of his depth at the best of times anyway. He's a good player, but he just seems to be there whenever it's time for something to get broken, there's JD Canvo to break it. It's a little bit like last season's Daichi Kamada. He's sort of like, oh my God, he's got the ball. Something terrible is about to happen, and it does. And that's just like, it's just played into his narrative. I just think it's unfair to book somebody for something that's happened accidentally. I mean, if it is an accident, then you've got to give a penalty, fine. But don't book the player at the same time for something that's an accident.
Jacob Murphy was booked for the incident as well, even though it was put down as accidental. And I've actually seen in the women's game someone get sent off for this, having an accidental handball and picking up a second yellow because of it. Murphy was hooked at half time as well, probably because he had a yellow card as well as anything, but they did make a couple of changes there. But match altering in many different ways there, wasn't it, really?
When that penalty was scored, that's at 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So if he's hooked straight after that, that's a game Newcastle went on to lose.
Yeah.
And Jacob Murphy is a good player.
Yeah.
And will have had an effect on the game, potentially. You say match altering, it could well have been.
But again, it's the principle of VAR dictating something that's massively process-driven and has to be consistent,
yeah,
irrespective of the fact that it's completely context-free. And it feels to me as though that is a law that could be tweaked. Representations could be made to IFAB.
Yeah.
Said, look, are you sure we're booking people for doing something by accident?
Yeah.
Is that really what was... Is that the smell of football, guys?
Is that the smell of football?
IFABs with their massive clothes pegs on their nose again.
Well, I don't know why people keep talking about this smell of football. I've never smelled any football.
Jonathan Wilson says something about VAR that I think is probably just worth adding as a bit of a postscript onto this, is that there is certain realities about football, modern football now, and that is that at the professional level, and particularly at the elite level, there's cameras everywhere. This game is being watched all over the world. If and when referees make horrific rickets, it's not reasonable to think that the only people who don't have the benefit of that replay are the people who have made the mistake.
Mm.
So the idea of VAR going altogether, I'm afraid, I feel that is just out of the question.
Mm.
Because if you think of it in those terms, it is ridiculous. If a referee gives a penalty and it's not a penalty, if a referee doesn't give a penalty and it is a penalty and it's a World Cup final, for example, let's take it to the nth degree and half the planet is watching this and the only person who isn't watching it is the guy who's made the decision, that does feel unfair on the referee. So I would suggest to you that there probably, sadly, is always likely to be a place for some kind of video review, but I feel that it needs to be massively, massively scaled back and restricted to extreme circumstances, moments of clear injustice. I don't see that happening at this point. I think it's more likely that we're going to go down the AR route. And in 10 years from now, if not sooner, human referees will be relegated to the lower leagues.
Yeah.
And that's just utterly tragic.
Well, I think we need to open the windows here because the fog of football here is thick. There's no Gary Neville Glade air fresheners that are going to clear this. Well, let's go back to Gary before we leave. Is this a Damascene moment for Gary? Are the scales going to fall from his eyes? And is he going to realise that it's VAR that was the problem here all along?
No, because he's part of the establishment, Graham.
Oh, he is, isn't he?
He's part of the fog of football. I don't think it's quite turkeys voting for Christmas, but I think it's against what the he's part of that product. So that would be, you know, it'd be strange for him to go against that.
It's massively turkeys voting for Christmas, Graham. The reason why he loves VAR, I suspect, is because of all of the content that it produces, the talking points that it produces. It makes life much, much easier for people whose job it is to do nothing but talk about football and publish their speakings. It just adds to that. And that's why people love it, because it creates talking points. We have literally spent 3/4 of an hour-ish talking about VAR, and we will continue to do so. And it's compelling content. I suspect that's probably what he meant. I mean, what he meant, I love it because it just creates great content. It's great talking points. It's fun. Whether or not, if you were to ask him, do you think it's good for the game? It'd be interesting to see whether or not he has a different answer. Is it good for Sky? Is it good for him? Is it good for his, you know, various, you know, enterprises? Yeah, you'd have to say probably it is. That's why he loves it.
It is, yes. For him, the smell of football is green, and that's what the smell is. Oh, yeah, it's folding. But, hey, what the hell is VAR going to mess up for us this weekend, I wonder? Well, FA Cup. Oh, do we have VAR in the FA Cup in the fourth round? I don't think it is. I think it's the fifth round it comes in. So we may have some largely VAR-free games this weekend to look forward to, which will be nice, because we've got Liam Rossini's trip back home to Hull City, a club he played for in an FA Cup final in 2014, when he takes his awful football club up there to see if they can get through to the fifth round against a Hull City side that was doing pretty well in the Championship. Jan, you'll be covering the Mags away to Villa. How do you think that one's going to go?
Well, Newcastle are in a bit of a funk at the moment, aren't they? To continue with the smell theme. And Eddie Howe is, there's the murmurs of discontent among the Geordie Nation are starting to become vocal assertions of demands for his head. So, you know, he's going to have to win that one, and it's going to be tough for him.
Yeah. Terry, you're going to have a week off football this week, or are you going to enjoy it as a neutral?
No, I will enjoy the FA Cup as a neutral, because I occasionally get trauma flashbacks for Macclesfield, but I maintain my position that Macclesfield's win was good for the cup, and that the cup is a wonderful thing and to be enjoyed. And I believe I've got Stoke versus Fulham.
Yes, you have.
Stoke versus Fulham. Stoke managed by Mark Robbins, of course, who is no stranger to FA Cup wonderment, both past and present. So, yep, looking forward to previewing that game and looking forward to watching it too. Looking forward to watching a Stoke game, lads. Whoever thought we'd ever see the day?
Well, indeed. And if you want to see all the games that we put in our box set this week, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set, where you'll see how to subscribe to our Substack. And once sign up for that, and it'll be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Smelly DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
I know there's rules, but there's a smell of the game.